You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 8:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. If you were in Appleton and Oshkosh listening on WISS or in Eau Claire listening on 93.5 The Tap, or even in Wisconsin Rapids this morning, Brian on WFHR, we are glad that you decided to join us. I'm Jamie Martinson.
I'm Brian Noonan, and I am glad everybody's listening and voicing their opinions. And if you want to do that yourself, 855-75-CIVIC is how you do it, 855-752-4842. Whether you agree, whether you disagree, whether you have thoughts on your own. How about this? Do you think apprenticeships are the solution to the teacher shortage in Wisconsin? And if not, what do you think is? The reason we bring this up is since I didn't know about this. I had talked about it when it was first being proposed that maybe this was going to be a thing. And it is, it has been since 2024. Wisconsin has had this really unique apprenticeship program for teachers. So future people who want to be teachers earn money while they're working in schools as they get their education and certifications. So instead of having to try to work, you know, a different kind of job and not have experience, you're just like you would if you're an electrician or a plumber or any other kind of job that has an apprenticeship. So state officials launched this program to ease the educator shortage and offering students an alternative route to the profession, one where they don't have to put their careers on pause while racking up student debt. But as participants reach the program's halfway point, its future beyond the initial pilot phase is unclear because there's not enough people getting involved. And it raises the question about whether apprenticeships will become a viable solution to Wisconsin's struggle to find and keep educators. And it, to me, again, this was a novel and really ambitious program that makes the path to education, to being an educator, much easier because you're really finding out. If you're in the heat of it all the time, you realize really quickly, this is what I'm meant to do or this is not what I'm meant to do. And you're still going through your classes, you're still getting your education, but in that time, you're getting paid to do this.
Yeah.
You're not coming in cold, which a lot of in the past, that's how teachers came in.
Yep.
Maybe a student teach for one semester. That's not enough.
No,
but to be
absolutely
in the school every day.
And I'll be honest. I know you were a teacher. I have friends who, dear friends that I met in college who have been teachers. And I actually texted one of them last night. She's worked her way up into an administrative role in a school in South Dakota. And I said, what do you think of this? Because I know for a fact that their school doesn't have a program like this. And she goes, I think this would be sensational. She's like, I think that this would be absolutely amazing to have if you had the resources to do so, because she's like, it's literally just being able to have people in the classroom longer to get better at their job. And she's like, then I think it would be great because you'd get to work those people maybe into a full-time role or get them hooked up at a school that you know absolutely needs that position. She was all for this. And she's like, it's really a shame that this is happening. That, you know, she's like, this is a program that is on a chopping block, because she's like, I think that this is phenomenal.
It would be if people wanted to do it, but I don't know why. I don't understand why when we're being told that we're getting a lot of teachers being educated in Wisconsin, it's not that problem.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to school to be teachers, but then they're leaving the state. That's the problem. So this homegrown program really seems to be the answer. And it's just, I don't understand why people aren't taking advantage of it. And of course you're not going to keep a program going and spending all that money,
right,
to keep a program up if nobody's using it.
Right. What I think is really fascinating about this, too, is when you look at this program that I think is so beneficial, we already have so many districts in this state who have a lack of teachers. They're struggling to balance their budgets. They're dealing with the rising costs. And you actually have people who are coming in there and who want to be involved in the school district where you can train them. Now, I understand that that also means that there's money involved and all of these school districts are already strapped and they're already having a hard time retaining the teachers. But at the same time, I feel like there has to be a way that they can keep this program and also figure out a way to benefit the school districts and these future teachers. Because those people who want to be teachers, those individuals are so important to the future of our, not only our kids. I know it sounds cliche, but it's not just our kids. It's literally about the communities, because communities are stronger by the schools, right? I mean, that's how I always think anyway. When you have good school systems, you have stronger communities. People rally around those things.
Right. We have to fund it. If you're not clear on how this works, so here's how this program works. A school district hires an apprentice. Just like, again, think of the trades. If you got to go through an apprenticeship. So they those apprentices enroll at Fox Valley Technical College or Waukesha County Technical College mm-hmm. for 2 years to complete a Foundations of Teacher Education Associate's degree. Once they finish that, they transfer to Lakeland University or the UW-Whitewater at Rock County to finish a bachelor's degree. Now, through those 4 years of schooling, the apprentice works inside the classroom as an assistant for 32 hours each week, spends 8 hours a week learning at college. The school district the person works for pays an hourly wage for those 40 hours. Then apprentices finish the training. They are qualified to work as a classroom teacher.
Again, that's awesome.
You're going to school anyway. You might as well get paid. And, you know, if you're getting, most people when they're going to school still have to have a job,
mm-hmm.
you know. So instead of working, I don't know, at Chipotle or wherever
right.
you're going to work, that is not connected.
No.
This way you're actually learning on, you're getting paid to learn on the job.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that we have to keep having these debates about teachers and schools in this state because, and I understand the issues that schools are having, whether that is because of the property tax debate, because it always comes back to the property tax debate in this state, and the referendums that all of these schools have to continue to put on the ballot. It's a major factor to be able to fund that. But we are losing potential teachers in the state before they ever step foot into a classroom. In fact, according to new data, more than 5,200 people completed educator preparation programs in this state, but only about 3,500 actually went on to teach in Wisconsin schools.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing the math this morning, and I get it, it's Friday, it's early, that's more than about 1,600 potential educators. Compensation is a major factor. The fact that
yes.
when they come out of classrooms, future teachers are saying they also don't feel prepared enough and they feel like they need to leave the state to get more prepared to be in the classroom. Isn't that kind of a catch-22 of what we're talking about right now?
Yeah, it's really hard. It's and of course, yes, but to your point, yes, if you're not prepared, and I've, you know, being in the classroom for as long as I was, I saw new teachers come in. And while they were very smart, there's classroom management and day-to-day hands-on stuff is like any job. You can know all the technical things to do at your job, but until you're actually doing your job, you're not going to pick up the finer points that are going to make you a success in that field. So to be working in a school and watch how every day for those 4 years experienced teachers do it. And that's how you learn. That's how I learned, by watching. And
mm-hmm.
I would say, oh, I like how that teacher handles this. I like how that teacher handles that. Oh, I don't think that method is for me, but
yeah.
this method I could use. It's invaluable. And
yeah.
then, I mean, but the bottom line is we have to have money to pay these
yes.
teachers. And that's nothing new. That is not just since this program started. Teachers are woefully underpaid. And I know the argument from people who are against that is, well, they get summers off and da-da-da-da-da. That's not the point. You're entrusting people with one of the most important jobs, getting your children ready to move on to the future, and you're going to pay them as little as possible. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So we need to look at that. And you also have to have incentives. If you're educating people in this state, you need incentives to make them want to stay in this state. I don't know if it's tuition cuts.
Yeah.
And you look at it kind of like the military. We're gonna get you through college, you know, some scholarships or whatever, and then you owe Wisconsin X amount of years. And there's a good chance if you get, because once teachers are in a district or in a school, unless it's financial or their commute, they don't really leave.
Right.
And bad administrators will drive them out. Low pay will drive them out. But it's normally not the kids who drive them out.
No. No, absolutely not. And in fact, I would argue that the teachers I know, they go out of their way to make sure that their students have what they need, because a couple of my friends live in really low income, work in really low income schools. And they know that sometimes they are the lifeline to those students because they're there on a daily consistent basis. They also know that sometimes when those students come in their classrooms, that is the adult interaction they're getting in their day because of the districts that they're teaching in. I will honestly say teaching was never something that I would have been good at, but I have all sorts of respect for teachers because they are underpaid. We've talked about this, right? Mm-hmm. You just mentioned it. They are completely underpaid. And in fact, in Wisconsin, when adjusted for inflation, pay for mid-career Wisconsin teachers currently is 22% lower than it was in 2010.
Oh, good.
I mean,
plus, there's not too many other jobs, think about it, where you're responsible for paying for your own supplies.
Right.
Teachers on average pay at least $500 a year. That's national average. $500 out of their pocket just to do their job.
Right. And when neighboring states are able to offer more money, they're able to offer more incentives. Obviously, your teachers are going to have to make a jump if they feel like their talents can be utilized and pay and compensated more fairly somewhere else. And it's a shame because then I think it's a disservice to all of us when that starts happening in our school districts. And, you know, there are so many barriers for people for getting education and for entering certain professions. This to me is one of those conversations that I guess if I'm DPI, I'm really trying to figure out how you keep it, right? I mean, just based on all of the information we just talked about between compensation or lack thereof compensation and the fact that it is so important for our teachers to be trained, it just really feels like if I'm DPI, I'm like, is there a way we can preserve this? Is there a way we can keep this program going so that we all benefit?
Well, you also need to get the word out a little more. And if you've got so many people coming to Wisconsin to be educated as teachers, why aren't we figuring out a way to make this program, you know, subsidize, have dorms at some of these colleges? I know like the community or the technical colleges don't have dorms, but you can have dorms somewhere somewhere for somebody to live.
Sure.
To get some out-of-state people involved in this program. I know you want people to... I know you want to do it for Wisconsin teachers. That's great. But if they're already coming here to be educated, why not figure out a way to keep them? All right. Well, when we come back, are programs that are designed to prevent overdose deaths a good idea, or are they just enabling poor choices? Dane County is making a call on one of their programs, so we'll get into that and so much more and more of your loving and supportive texts and calls at 855-75-CIVIC. Yes, this is Daybreak. I am Brian Noonan, the bane of people's existence.
Who knew we were going to upset people this much on a Friday? It's sunshine. It's Friday, people. Enjoy your day. I'm Jamie Martinson. Thank you for listening today. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. We hope you're having a great morning so far. Thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate it. My name is Jamie Martinson.
Hi, I'm Brian Noonan. Yeah, so what Jamie said. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-484. Oh, God, don't say don't. Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? Oh, Jamie. That was Jamie, by the way. If you're keeping your tally sheets at home, I chastised her for that. Ooh, don't say that word. All right. I understand that drug addiction is a disease. Yeah. I also know that there are choices involved with that. And I applauded when communities around Wisconsin started putting in these vending machines so that that they had the shots to bring somebody out if they were having an overdose. Dane County had gone a little farther, but they are now ending an initiative to prevent overdose deaths by giving out pipes. So 4 years ago, public health officials started giving people pipes and other supplies to reduce the health risks associated with smoking drugs. The program was part of the department's broader efforts to reduce the harms of drug use. For decades, syringe service programs across the country have provided harm reduction supplies to people who inject drugs. Though controversial, these programs reduce hospitalizations and overdose deaths while increasing participation in drug treatment. And I understand all that, but I'm conflicted with this, Jamie, and I don't know where you stand. For me, I get what the programs are trying to do, and I understand that we need to help. I also understand that in this day and age, money is tight.
Mm-hmm.
City, state, county budgets are tight. And while we're focusing on drug addiction, which again is a disease, alcoholism is a disease.
Right.
We don't have programs for that. There are meetings, there are different things, but those are all not state sponsored.
Right.
So while it's unfortunate that the program has to end, I get it, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have these types of programs in the future, but I also get when they have to go away. And I know that overdose deaths were very high in Wisconsin.
Yep.
They hit a record high a few years ago in 2022 at over 1,400. But there's a part of me that goes, is there a better way to spend the money to help folks rather than give them the means to continue on with this addiction?
Yeah, because, I mean, for me, I guess for me, I always look at it, and I'm going to be honest right now.
Why start now?
My family has had, as I look at my cousins and some of my uncles, drug addiction in my family has run rampant.
Really?
And
okay.
I've witnessed people almost overdosing. I have witnessed people basically coming out of their drug-induced stupors, literally, in our basement growing up, because they'd come to my mom because she would take care of them and help them and then usher them to rehab again for the 190th time. So I've witnessed this firsthand, and it's painful. It's agony. It rips people apart. It rips families apart. And the one thing that I learned is that no matter how many resources you take away, they always find a way to get those supplies,
yes,
the things that they need. And
it's the same with alcohol. And my family alcoholism has been a big thing in my family. But it's the same thing. If you want a drink, you're going to find a drink.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to take drugs, you're going to find a way to take drugs. And there's this nagging part of me that goes, why are we helping?
Yeah.
You know, why are we? I understand the clean needle program. I understand all the need for the clean needles.
They have to be willing to do it themselves, though.
You have
the
to
tools
hit rock
are
bottom.
The tools are all there. They will find a way. And I don't say that to be callous, because I believe there is worth in these programs. I really, truly do.
Yes.
But until somebody is willing to admit that they have a problem, until they are willing to, if you've never been there, if you've never witnessed this, if you've never experienced yourself, until these people who are addicted feel like they have no other way out, and they want to make that change in themselves, they are going to find a way to find their drug of choice, whether that is the narcotics, whether it is the alcohol, whatever it might be. Gambling is another form of that addiction.
Yeah.
They're going to find a way to do and use those behaviors. And so I mean, I'm always torn on these subjects, which is why I say
right,
this.
Right, and people will argue with you, well, you know, people aren't dying from gambling too much. No, but they're ruining their lives. People
yeah.
do die from alcoholism in not as quickly as
right.
they die from drug overdoses, but they do. So we're singling this out, and I would rather see the money for these programs put into treatment centers.
Yes.
So that when people do finally hit the point where they're like, I can't do this anymore. I
yeah.
need to change. There's affordable or free ways for them to get treatment rather
yes.
than having to
yes.
look for a rehab that they're, if they have insurance
so
at all.
They're so expensive.
It's impossible.
It's so expensive. And here's the other thing that I would say to that. Watching one of my uncles go through this and have a daughter who was only a toddler at the time and see what that did to her and the long term ramifications of watching her dad go through this. I would love to see those resources also go to the family who has to be involved in this and watch those people go through this addiction, because yeah. it is torture, because there is literally nothing you can do to change their mind. And they are fueled by the drug. It doesn't matter how much you love them. It doesn't matter how much care you give them. They don't care. They don't care. Because there is something that in their brain is much more important than anything you can give them at that moment in time.
Now, they said, in fairness, they did say that the PIPE program worked. More people visited health officials to receive overdose reversal medication and other resources. But the program was probably illegal under Wisconsin law.
Great.
Which allowed injection supplies but not smoking materials to be given away. So we'll see what happens. All right. Let's talk politics again, because people love it. What lessons can the political parties learn from the 2024 elections? We'll get into that and welcome your comments on the Civic Media.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I didn't realize we were so close to going back on the air. I have yogurt bites in my mouth.
Oh, still snacking. Can't do that while you're talking
on the
radio.
So there's still snacks?
There are still some snacks, yes. All yes, right. I had to grab some yogurt bites. After this morning, I need a little sugar rush. So I went and grabbed some yogurt bites.
And maybe a little recalibration of your stances on things.
That's right. Oh, good thing we're gonna address that here in just a moment.
Jamie, just come to the dark side. Just do what I'm telling you. Everything will be fine.
Oh, my goodness. Before we jump into this next topic, we do want to remind everybody that starting Monday, Brian, we're going to accelerate the summer with our multi-state text to win contest. We're very excited about this. June 1st, it is going to be your daily chance to win either $100 or be qualified or get a Wisconsin Dells prize package, I should say. And then every entry we'll put you into our grand prize drawing for $250 in gas or $250 in groceries, which we could all use right now. But in order to play and start qualifying for all of these great prizes on Monday morning, you need to get the Civic Media app that is free to download. So please do that over the weekend, because 7 a.m. Monday morning is going to be your first opportunity to qualify to win.
Well, I already deleted it after that last segment. Well, but reinstall it, because you can, you know,
that's
you can
right.
listen to one of the music stations and still be
that's
involved
right.
in the text
that's
to win.
Right. You don't even have to listen to us. It's fine. You can listen to whoever you want to qualify to text and win. But those are some
right.
good prizes that we could all use a little extra in our wallets right now. So,
no doubt about it. All right, Jamie. You know, I like to hear both sides to try to be a little more educated on things.
Mm-hmm.
I also like to learn lessons from things of the past. So, what lessons can the political parties learn from the 2024 election? Because this year we have a lot of candidates in the Democratic primary.
Yeah.
Seven main ones, a couple fringe ones, one guy who's stealing Francesca Hong's lawn signs in Milwaukee. There are people everywhere. There's Democrat. You can't swing a dead ballot box without hitting a Democratic candidate for governor,
right.
which is great, but The 2018 race is the only Democratic gubernatorial primary in Wisconsin's last 40 years that has had more than three candidates. This year's race could shape up to have similar number of names on the August 7th ballot. So what does the past tell us about how this summer's race may play out?
Well, this is a very large number of candidates in one race.
It is a lot.
And it does have a lot of similarities between with 2018. This particular primary will also take place in the middle of another term of President Donald Trump, just like in 2018. And that might contribute, analysts in the state of Wisconsin say that that could contribute to a higher number of candidates because they see a higher energy among Democratic voters, which is why you might start seeing why you have all of these different candidates potentially throwing their hat into the ring.
Makes sense. So what about what's different?
Yeah. So one of the things that's most different in this particular race is that there's not really a standout candidate at this point. Evers first entered the primary race in August of 2017, and he had a lot of momentum from a successful reelection campaign as state superintendent of schools in that that spring. So one of the very first polls of the gubernatorial race that came out from Marquette Law School back in March of 2018, Evers actually led the field with about 18% of voters leaning his way, the only candidate at that time who was polling with double digits. Now, the polling isn't really as clear this time around. In March, Marquette did their current poll, the most current poll that we have, and Francesca Hong was leading the field with about 14% of the vote. Mandela Barnes was close behind with about 11% of the votes, and then there was just a smattering of support ranging from about 1% to 3% for all of the other candidates, and which left, I believe, it was around 40 to 45% of voters who were completely unsure about any of the candidates or didn't have a candidate at that particular time. So that I think is going to be the key and the caveat as we get more of these Marquette polls leading up to the primaries. Will people start coalescing around one candidate over another, or will we continue to look at a more divided front of voters? Maybe less engaged.
I know Democrats don't like to hear this, but I'm going to keep banging on this drum. The purity test that some Democrats put our candidates through is self-defeating. And it is, I know you didn't like when we talked to the Republican strategist, but one thing we did bring up is why do they seem to coalesce behind their candidate and Democrats do not? And if you don't like hearing the truth, well, put your fingers in your ear and because that is the truth.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. We've seen it before. And unless this is a lesson I think Democrats need to learn that Republicans have mastered.
Yeah.
And we need to get stronger on this. I know during the primary, push as hard as you can for whoever you want. If you want a very progressive candidate, campaign for that candidate and work as hard as you can. If you want a more moderate Democrat, campaign for that person as hard as you can. But once the primary is over and the candidate is selected, you've got to.
Yeah.
Got to back that candidate. Can you still voice concerns and policies that your candidate was championing? Yes,
absolutely. Now, one of the things that I guess I'm most concerned about looking at this election versus if we're going to look at similarities of 2018 is that back then there was a lot of energy in the election because people were focused on Governor Scott Walker, who, if you remember right, Tony Evers ran against.
Right.
So were people actually voting for Tony Evers or were they just voting against Walker's years in office? Like I go back to that. However, what I will say is Governor Evers leaves the office as one of Wisconsin's most consistently popular statewide politicians. His approval ratings were usually positive, even if they were very narrow, because not a lot of, you know, electeds get these huge swings in popularity. He actually won five statewide elections during his political career, and even people who disagreed with him politically, right? The one thing that they could also say is that he was steady, he was approachable, and he was less partisan than a lot of elected officials. And I think that's why people liked him. Tony was not a polished politician. He's not.
Well, he comes from a different background.
Right.
Comes from an education
and
background.
And I think people appreciated that. And that's what's different about 2018, too. There were people of varying backgrounds in 2018. There were people coming from all parts of the state running for governor.
Right.
Most of the candidates this time around are from Madison and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So,
but it's much more diverse now.
We've got
a slate of Democratic nominees who represent all different
yes.
types of people, all different political
yes.
leanings, everything across the Democratic Party,
yep.
what the Democratic Party is supposed to look like. And it does. So at this point, there's somebody for everybody, I would think.
Yes.
If you can't find out of the top seven a candidate in this primary that you're back, I don't know who. You better run yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And here's the thing. No matter who wins this primary August 7th, Tom Tiffany is the guy you're running against. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And so here's the thing. And I would be remiss if we didn't go through this, because when we had Rusty on last hour, I asked him a little bit of whether or not Tom Tiffany was going to have to basically reconcile his voting record with people in Wisconsin. And so I did a little research last night, because as this campaign shifts into high gear, we're going to hear a lot about what these candidates plan to do. And Rusty's absolutely correct. Tom Tiffany is doing the right thing right now by focusing on the economy. But they're going to need to
look. How dare you say that?
But they're going to also need to look at what those candidates have already done. Okay, so I've got some receipts on Tiffany's voting record. He has voted against a number of federal proposals involving healthcare access, food assistance, mm-hmm. affordable housing, voting rights, and veterans benefits. Now, that includes voting against extensions of the ACA tax credits that help Wisconsinites afford health insurance. And remember, thousands of people are no longer insured because they actually got priced right out of the market. So
right.
keep that in mind. He's also supported legislation that critics said would have reduced Medicaid funding, and he's backed proposals that would cut SNAP food assistance benefits. He also voted against the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act and the For the People Act, which were both aimed at expanding voting access and election protections. On veterans issues, he was the only member of Wisconsin's congressional delegation to vote against the Honoring Our Pact Act, which expanded health care and disability benefits for veterans exposed to toxic substances during military service. Only Wisconsin delegate. All right, keep that in mind. Now, at the state level, he also opposed the recent bipartisan surplus proposal that included tax relief, rebate checks, and additional funding for our schools. So that is just a little. I mean, I could have gone on. We'd be here for like an hour.
The last one is not going to carry as much weight.
No.
Everything you said up to that point is indictable. And that's why we asked, where's his weakness?
Right.
And that's it. You got to show those receipts. And This is again where I get accused of bashing progressives. Don't focus on the far left things. Don't focus on things that don't matter. What matters right now in this moment is the economy and his record on voting. And no matter what he says now, he's got the actions
mm-hmm.
that tell more than any campaign promise. So if you're not attacking that, if you're trying to bring up other things and you don't have a concrete plan, you're making a mistake as a Democrat.
Hopefully.
You have to learn that lesson. Attack, attack,
yes.
attack. And he's got enough soft spots on his underbelly to keep attacking those spots.
Hopefully, if you are out there campaigning for your favorite candidate or whoever wins the primary in August, when you go door to door and you do your door knocking, these are the things that you are bringing up. Because he is going to run on the economy. He is going to tell you how much better he would be for the economy. Really? You voted against all of the things that make it affordable to live on a daily basis. And you also still, by the way, oppose a living minimum wage.
Well, because that costs businesses money, Jamie. We don't want to cost businesses more money. You know, he's endorsed by the guy who said that our gas prices, the increase is peanuts, that he doesn't think about how his decisions affect our pocketbooks. So we shouldn't be surprised
right.
that this is what's coming out. So if Democrats learn anything, you know, it's those things. And Republicans already know those. Republicans know how to attack. And I, you know, you can argue all day and night, why are we why are you bringing this up? Because it's important to know. Mm-hmm. It's important to know what the other side is doing.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm sorry. If something doesn't make sense, I'm going to call it out. Republican or Democrat.
And I'm really hoping that as we go through this the next few months, and I'm really, really hoping that as we watch these candidates, you know, vie for the top spot, I really hope that if the Republicans, as Rusty alluded to last hour, are building a really great ground campaign and a really great grassroots effort, which they haven't always been as good at as the Democrats, right. I hope that that is part of it.
Well, that's what Lori just texted in. She said, hi, this is Lori from Hayward. May I remind everybody that Donald Trump ran focusing on the economy. You are correct. Promising people a lot of stuff he never delivered. We need to get out and campaign, talking with people and listening to what they expect and running our campaigns accordingly. Ollie,
thank you,
or
Lori
rather,
thank
you are 100% correct. Thank you. Dairyland Diaries,
yay,
coming up next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It's 8:52 right now. Thank you for joining us this morning. One of our favorite parts of the day. But, Brian, I'm going to let you deliver the news that just came across. Well, thank you, Parker, for flagging this for us this morning.
Yeah, Parker, this is good news. A federal judge has halted work on Trump's anti-weaponization fund. This is a federal judge in Virginia temporarily blocked the administration from moving ahead with its plans to create a nearly $1.8 billion fund to compensate people who it says were wrongly targeted. The brief order from U.S. District Judge Liani Brinkema says the administration cannot take any action, quote, pursuant to the creation or operation of the anti-weaponization fund, which includes the transferring of money to the fund, the consideration of any claims submitted to the fund, and the dispersing of any funds from the fund. She set a hearing for June 12th to hear arguments over whether she should issue a more lasting pause on the government's efforts to set up the fund, which is being challenged by a diverse coalition of people and entities who say they would be ineligible to receive money from it. So, but
good news.
Little sense coming into the
situation,
and so now a couple more weeks, but that doesn't stop him from doing whatever he wants, you know. Unfortunately, all right. Yeah, let's talk
still
a little.
Good
let's
stuff.
Have a few good stories from around Wisconsin. This is kind of exciting. A Wisconsin dance teacher and choreographer is stepping onto the national stage with an upcoming appearance on the 21st season of America's Got Talent.
Wow.
The acts on the long-running talent competition are vying for the coveted golden buzzer. AJ Juarez grew up in Buenos Aires. He's the founder and director of Barrio Dance Studio in Madison, where he teaches and choreographs in Latin, hip-hop, and other contemporary styles. His dance troupe, which includes his wife, was recently invited to audition for America's Got Talent after a producer saw them perform at a World Dance Regional competition in Chicago. AJ said the Barrio group is known for bringing an infectious energy to their performances, and their routine is under 2 minutes for AGT. It's set to a medley of songs from the iconic rock band Queen.
Love it.
The biggest challenge for the group, how to make the music of Queen complement their style of dance. Yes.
Yes, that
because
makes sense.
When AJ moved to Madison in 2012, he thought there was a missing component to the dance community. He said, AGT is an opportunity to put Madison on the map. I'm excited to see my team on that big screen and all their family. Then the people that love them see them shine on there, according to AJ. So good
it.
Luck.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Don't you always get a little bit more involved when it's a like something?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're like totally like you know these people that you're
home
your best
team,
friend.
Man.
Yeah, yeah. You're totally in. In other stories from Dairyland Diaries, I love this one. Girls flag football programs keep popping up around the state. More than 30 programs have begun competition in the last few years, with Madison area schools marking some of the most recent additions. Now, the sport's popularity in the United States has skyrocketed just in the past 5 years. As of May, 20 states have sanctioned flag football programs, 15 states have pilot programs, and 5 will vote on adding the sport in the next 2 years. Madison School District play football coordinator Adam Smith says football is attached to male athletes, and this version is kind of like, well, if the boys can do it, then girls can do it too. And they can also be very athletic. Now, Wisconsin is one of several states with independent programs sprouting up. More than 30 high schools in the state run club or intramural flag football programs. Smith, who is a longtime teacher, he's also a football coach in Madison, started running camps this year after colleges started offering athletic scholarships for flag football. The positive response led him to bring up the idea to creating club programs to Madison's athletic director. He gave the green light for this. The four Madison high schools and Verona all founded flag football teams in the past year. Madison Memorial held its first practice on May 2nd, yeah. I should say. Just six girls attended. And the coolest part is the Packers have been one of the biggest proponents of the sport's growth. They've even hosted flag football training camps as well as tournaments. So
that's fantastic.
Good on you, girls. I love it.
Yeah, come on, ladies. Get out there. Knock it around a little bit.
Football's fun.
Finally, this is I've been seeing stories about this from all over the country, and now it's coming to Wisconsin. If you've been on the east side of Madison, maybe you've seen just a little wooden pink and purple box. It's glittery. It's hanging on a streetlight pole. Well, it's like the little free libraries. You've seen those in people's yards. Those are great. But these are trinket boxes. Yes, a trinket trade box. It's called the Thorpe Street Trinket Trade. It's filled with keychains, small figurines, some Pokemon cards, all kinds of little things. There are more than 1,200 of these trinket boxes worldwide, but only two so far in Madison. The creative mind behind the trinket box is Elle Urschler. She's a hairstylist in Wisconsin. So we've got some others around there. Some have VHS tapes or books or little things. But to qualify, they say a trinket is a small, cheap thing that you collect. She says a lot of people have a lot of different ideas of trinkets. The only rule for a trinket box is no broken things, no food. And if you wouldn't be excited to find it in there, don't put it in there.
I've
seen like little rubber ducks or other kind of things.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's just a fun. Can't we just have fun?
Yes.
No, we can't have fun. There's no fun. Who am I talking to? Don't be fun. Don't be funny. Don't do anything. But so if you see a trinket box, take something out. But you have to put something in.
Yeah.
You got to swap it out, just like the libraries.
Yes.
I like this.
I love it.
I like anything that is going to, even for a brief moment,
bring
someone a little happiness.
Bring some joy. Yes.
Because, listen, as evidenced by this morning, joy is fleeting. We know that. Happiness is fleeting for some people. Not for me. I'm happy. You know why? Because in the immortal words of Friday at 9 o'clock, I'm done.
We're done.
That's it. Well, thank you for being here all week. We'll be back, whether you like it or not, on Monday. And don't forget, the big contest starts on Monday. So download the Civic Media app. Have a great weekend. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. Thank you so much for joining us again today. We always appreciate it. This is the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.